And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I thank you for tuning in today. Hey, if you have any questions, I've got a very specific show today and getting into some operational type stuff. This often generates questions on your side. You can send those to me at askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. If it's on your mind, somebody else is thinking it, and we can bring that up on the air. I'll answer those directly with you as well, of course. But what am I thinking about? Well, I just completed resident turns, you may call those tenant turns, at two of my single family rental houses. I've done a total of four this year, which, looking back over the decade plus, that's about normal for my portfolio, about four per year. But I just wrapped up two. One I got the family moved in 2 weeks ago, and one this week. So that is my topic today. I want to talk to you about preparing for and managing a turn, right? Somebody moves out, somebody else is going to move in, and the possible vacancy associated with that. Now, why do I say possible vacancy? If you are doing it right, it could be 3 days, 2 days, 1 day, zero. Can you go negative? Can you have negative vacancy? You can. I'll tell you how. In fact, I had one as little as 1 day to turn before between the residents. It can be really, really short. Now, it can go longer as well. So that can be an issue. And this is typically our biggest expense as residential rental real estate investors, the turn. So we're going to talk about how to minimize that cost, and whether maybe there's actually some opportunity, if you're looking at it the right way, in that resident turn. Now, if you're new to the program, who am I? Well, my name again is Andy. I am in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I've been a member at Lifestyles Unlimited for, geez, over a dozen years now. We've been buying single-family rental houses that entire time. That's what got me to my financial freedom. Retired my wife just 3 years after we started. I'm now fully in this space as well. So we've been buying houses for a long time. We've been managing the portfolio. We've been following the Lifestyles model and the education there, and it's helped me achieve great success here, which is why I'm talking to you about this today. So if you're new to the show, that's who I am. Who's Lifestyles Unlimited? Well, Lifestyles Unlimited is an education and mentoring group focused squarely on residential real estate. Now, I'm going to be focusing largely on single family today, but a lot of what we talk about applies to apartments as well. And we invest in both of those spaces, single family rental houses and apartments. We use those to get to our financial freedom. And Lifestyles Unlimited has been around over three decades in this space. That's a really long track record. And I'm happy that I have been a part of that as a member for over 12 years now. Lots of members that have done this very thing, gotten to financial freedom by investing in single family rental houses and apartments. Now, that may beg the question again, if you are new, why residential real estate? Well, think about your IRA or your 401k, you put money in and you wait for it to go up in value. You're speculating, you're hoping on growth. And we've seen growth this year in the market for sure. Stock market, however you're accessing stocks, maybe bonds, you're waiting and seeing. If it's a 401k, you don't get any cash flow, right? If you're investing in minerals, it's waiting, right? There's no cash flow. We make money on our residential real estate five ways. That's why. And cash flow, I've mentioned this now a couple of times. That's our big focus when we start, because we want to create enough passive income, enough passive cash flow. We talked about this on last week's show, to get to that financial freedom so that we can be real estate retired and exit that job whenever we're ready. 3 years for my wife, right? Lots of members do it even quicker than that. But cash flow is the driver there. And cash flow, by the way, this is the one that people lament when they do deal with a vacancy, when they do deal with a turn at one of their properties. And again, a turn just means somebody's moved out. I've got to get it ready, do a make ready, and then somebody new moves in. We call that a resident turn or a tenant turn. But the lament is squarely on the cash flow, because there went my cash. All that cash flow I collected over the course of the year is gone. My profit is gone. But if you're thinking in those terms, that's rather short-sighted, because, again, we make money five ways. Cash flow, yes, great. I love to have it. By the way, if you have one house and one vacancy, that can be problematic. That's why I will tell you, build. Get to two houses, get to four houses, get to eight houses, get to 10 houses. You take that cash flow from anywhere $200 to maybe $600 per month in the markets where we buy, and you double it, and you triple it, and you quadruple it, quintuple it, I guess. Right? You get to where you're making $10,000 per month. One vacancy's not a problem. Don't get so focused on that turn cost, whatever that amount adds up to be, and we'll talk a little bit about what flows into that calculation later in the show. But remember that you're making money multiple ways on these houses, and sometimes I have to remind myself, if there was an added cost that I wasn't expecting in a turn, I go back and I look at my equity capture when I bought that house, bam, and the equity I've built up during that hold period while those residents were in place. It is sometimes pretty significant over time, not to mention the market appreciation. And that begs a question. What is the normal case? How long do people tend to stick around in these rental houses? And let's talk about a couple cases here, ideal to maybe worst case. And I think the ideal case is that resident stays in the house till we're ready to execute our exit strategy. And again, that's what it's about, getting that equity, enjoying the cash flow positive throughout. But eventually, we're going to tap into those gains, into that equity, by selling. You may do a cash out refi sometime during your hold period, always a great thing to do. That is a tax-free way to access that equity and get to that money and redeploy that. But at some point, you're going to sell. And we tell you, hey, maybe hold it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And the ideal case here is that one resident that you marketed to and got leased up right after your renovations, they just stay to the end. And it actually goes one better, and I've had this happen. You sell to that resident. Hey, they're in place. Whatever maintenance or whatever issues might have come up during their occupancy, they've worn the carpet a little bit too much or whatever. You don't have to deal with it now. You just sell it to them. Now it's on their plate. And I'll tell you, the good thing about being a single-family rental owner is that single-family renters do tend, they're a little bit different. They tend to stay longer than people that go out and rent an apartment. And this is good. This is a good thing, because a house does not have quite the economies of scale of apartments. If I have a 200-unit apartment community, I have a maintenance staff. I have probably multiple maintenance people on the team that can go out when someone moves out. Bam, bam, bam. They hit that apartment. Turn it. It's done in a day or two, ready to go. Doing a make ready on a, let's say, a 1,500 or maybe an 1,800 square foot, three bedrooms, two bathroom house, is naturally going to cost more and take more time than doing a make ready on a 600 square foot one bedroom apartment. By the way, this is one reason to put in when you're thinking about your investing criteria, the types of properties that you're targeting in the single family space. This is a good reason to put a cap or an upper end on your target square footage. You probably have a range. I don't know. Mine personally, 800 to 2,000. I don't want to go beyond that. I know people that will go bigger. I know people that say no bigger than 1,500. Right? This comes into play during your renovations, of course, but certainly when you do your turn. So that's your ideal case. They just stay forever. Stay until you're ready to sell. Mid case, let's say, they stay 3 to 5 years. And I see this a lot. This tends to be, I'd say, for a lot of my residents, they tend to be in there for about 3 to 5 years. And guess what? If you're following the Lifestyles Unlimited model, you're selling within that time frame, so that takes you really back to the ideal case anyhow. That works out perfectly. But if you are holding longer, then yeah, you're going to deal with a turn at that point. So maybe get to that bridge, consider the sale option. Worst case, in my mind, they stay for the exact length of that 12-month lease and then move on. So you haven't really had time to collect more cash. Not typical. Again, not typical in most rental houses, right? If you want proof, go out to some of my rental houses. Go look in the garages. Two-car garage house. just chocked full of boxes and stuff. And going to that extra bedroom, same story here. A lot of my residents don't want to deal with moving that stuff. They enjoy that extra space simply as storage. Moving would be a nightmare. So they do tend to stick around commonly. Those shorter stays, 12-month, tends to be, I see this more commonly in people that are moving from out of state to DFW or maybe from somewhere else in the state. They're new to the area. They want to get a feel. They want to rent, get a feel for DFW. It's a big area, right? Big footprint before they go out and buy or rent their next property. Now, I have had a few cases where it's even shorter. And I actually came out more profitable than less. We're going to talk about that here in just a minute. Now, if the tenancy is shorter due to an eviction, I would tell you you're doing something wrong in your screening. 9 times out of 10. Focus on improving that skill set, because if you screen right, you are setting yourself up for success. And you're not going to have that shorter hold period tenancy because I had to kick them out. Screen right. We teach you how to screen. We have vendors that help us with that process. Very, very important. Very, very important. In fact, if you're screening right, you're going to get a feel for how long this person intends to stay. And if you've got multiple applicants and if you're following our model, best product, best price, you typically are going to have multiple applicants. You're going to have the pick of the litter. You can pick that one that's going to be staying longer. Now, minimizing your turns, your vacancy cost, it really does start even before that first occupancy, before that first resident moves in. It starts by buying right? Buying the right product in the right market. And due diligence is paramount here. Is that market, is that submarket, is that town that I'm looking at, is there population growth? Is there job growth? Is there strong rental demand? Are there fewer rental properties on the market that will therefore, thereby limit supply and keep people in place? We saw this very, in COVID, very, very pronounced. Very little on the market. Nobody was moving. The people that were moving had very little to choose from. Rents went up massively as a result of this. But people stuck around because simply there's nothing on the market. Nowhere to move. So that's a part of your due diligence. What does that rental market look like? Is it a market where it makes more sense to rent than buy? And that's a lot of markets across the United States right now. Makes more sense to rent a house than to go out and buy my personal residence. For you, the investor, right, we have ways to get around with financing, how to lower our out-of-pocket to where it still makes sense for us, right? But for those that are looking for a place to put a roof over their head, most markets in the U.S. right now, it makes more sense to rent than buy, which is why it makes more sense for you to invest in real estate. I've got one more for you when we come back, and a couple more tips and tricks for managing that maintenance and that vacancy cost.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
The Lifestyles Unlimited team of real estate investing mentors and educators want to meet you. Learn to retire in 5 years or less. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb. I thank you for joining me today. Hey, if you have any questions, send those over to me at askandy@luinc.com. And we're talking today about managing vacancy costs, managing the cost to turn a property. You've had someone in there, they've moved out. I got to get it ready. Someone else is going to move in. That's a turn. So how do we do that? And I was just telling you ahead of this the segment break that it starts when you buy. Buying the right product. And we've talked a little bit about the due diligence you should do there. Final question there is simply, is the product right for the area that I'm targeting? And for example, let's say I buy a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house in an area that's a big feeder for, elementary schools, the school system, that sort of thing. Well, that may not be the best choice to get that family that's going to move in there and stick around for a long time while their kids grow up through the elementary school system into the, the junior high or high school, whatever they do there. But that two bed, one bath may not be the best product type, right? So that's one of those questions you may ask yourself. And then you want to be sure you buy for the right price for a couple of reasons. Number one, you make your money when you buy. That's where our equity capture is going to come from. And you want to be sure you're buying at a price that supports the rehab or the renovation budget that you need so that you can renovate the property properly. You want to rehab right. And again, this is where our motto comes into play. Best product, best price. Anything that's broken now or could break. You have to think about this. Could break in the next handful of years. I want to fix it now. I want to replace it now. And I talk a lot about this on the show from the perspective of the rental owner. That's great for me because that brings all of my CapEx forward to today during the renovation. It brings my maintenance forward to today and results in less headache for me because I'm not having to do a bunch of maintenance as soon as I've got the house renovated. Guess what? It doesn't just minimize your headaches, but those of your residents as well. And they're going to appreciate a well-run, well-operated, well-renovated property. And what goes into that renovation? Well, here you can think ahead to that possible turn. Put in fixtures and paint and surfaces that are going to be more resistant to wear and tear. For example, you know, I've carpeted in a lot of my houses and a lot of the bedrooms, not in the main traffic areas. Well, better than carpet would be a harder surface like laminate or even better, luxury vinyl plank. Very popular right now. Looks great, right? Handles the traffic. Don't have to do the carpet cleaning at the turn. Or thinking about countertops, granite or butcher block with a nice polyurethane finish instead of Formica. Formica gets damaged a lot easier. Now, the market where you're, and this goes back to your due diligence, the market where you're buying and renovating may not support granite, the added cost to put that in. But if I can put it in, that hard surface is going to do a lot better. And over the long term, it will perform for me better. I stopped putting in garbage disposals. People don't notice it. At first, they're like, is there no garbage? Okay, all right. Garbage disposals create a lot of headaches for you and for the resident. So get educated on this part of the process so that you know what you're doing and that you are following the notion of best product, best price. This all goes into before that house is even occupied. And build a great team, by the way, to support you through that acquisition, of course, and then during the renovations. Are you the best person to be out there putting in those countertops and mounting that sink? No. Get someone else in there that knows what they're doing and is going to do it right. That will minimize maintenance through the whole period as well. Now, we still don't even have anybody in play. We're talking about turns, but I don't even have the house occupied yet. Before you get to that first occupant, right, we're buying right, we're renovating right. You want to be sure when you're done with your renovations, get a good set of marketing pictures of the property after it's rehabbed, but before it is occupied. I've made this mistake a few times. I just forget to get the really cool, slick-looking pictures. And that's a problem later on when the house is occupied. I don't want to go in and take a bunch of pictures with people's stuff everywhere. I don't want to put that on the internet because that is a liability. So you want to get those pictures while the house is still vacant. It makes it harder to market the property later. So we're just thinking about prep work now. And then get good documentation of the condition of the property today before moving. This goes whether it's your first resident or when you're doing that turn and you've done the make ready, go and get the next set of pictures of everything. Document that condition. This will help you later when you get to that turn if you have one. Again, you may hold through to the sale period. But getting pictures of everything just shows the condition. It helps if there is a maintenance call on something. You can say, okay, well, look at that. No, okay, I see what we did there. Helps you make an informed decision. And then as far as documentation goes, this goes parallel, have an inventory and condition form ready for that new resident to fill out. And if you've ever rented an apartment or a house, you've probably done this, right? There are two columns, one for the owner on the right side, one for the new resident on the left side. And they're just going to go through room by room and document any deficiencies. We need this documentation today because at the end of 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, whenever they move out, we want to be able to look back and again, look at our pictures as well and know what was the condition of the property. Why? Well, if everything was in good repair then, and you handed that inventory and condition form to me confirming that, but this thing here is broken now and this thing's broken now, well, I can charge that against your security deposit, you know, barring wear and tear. And it's interesting. Sometimes I get these back just full of notes. All the most minuscule things. These people have probably lost a security deposit in the past. Sometimes it's just full of all kinds of notes. But sometimes it's completely blank. They just signed everything, right? So you want to document that for that property condition for the eventual move out. Be sure to put a time limit, by the way, on return or delivery of that inventory and condition form. Do you want it back tomorrow? Is it in 3 days? Is it 5 days? I probably wouldn't go past 7 days. Certainly not a month later. Hey, you've been living in it a month. You moved all your stuff in, wear and tear, blah, blah, blah. These are all things you do before that resident. And a lot of this then is going to flow into your lease terms. Your lease protects you now, during the hold period, and at move out. So let's talk about the lease just a little bit here in the remainder of this segment here. Leasing in the slow... I just moved two residents in. Slower time of the year. If you're doing that, if you have a move-in in October, November, December, right, there is seasonality to this market. Fewer people move at this time of year. Consider putting having a longer or possibly shorter lease that puts the end period of that lease in the spring. You know, on one of the recent move-ins, we're going to take it out to spring of 2026. I don't want to have my lease end November 30th. You're all sitting around on the couch moaning after eating too much turkey. No one's moving, or very few people. Obviously, these guys did, but we'll take that into the spring. I'll have better marketability. This will help me minimize my turn time. So thinking about the structure of your lease, the lease term, this will help you in that sense. Other lease terms, we have a 45 or maybe a 60-day notice requirement. Those used to be shorter. They've gotten longer as the market has gotten tighter for rentals. If I have 40 or 60-day notice requirement, that means my resident has to give me at least 60 days notice that they're going to terminate the lease at the end of the lease period. That gives me ample time to market before move out. Some people don't like doing that. They want to wait till it's vacant. But boy, I want to get that thing listed, start showing today, so that next resident is lined up to move in the day after that one moves out. Think about that. Don't wait. Get that process going. Now, some people, like I said, do not like that. Some of my residents do not like that. There is a clause in my lease. I think it's paragraph 14D, section 2. It says, hey, you know, the resident can withdraw my authorization to show the property, basically, if they pay an additional month's rent. So I'm giving up 30 days or whatever it is, 45, but they're paying me. I've never had anybody take advantage of that. Would I accept that? Sure I would. Other side of the equation, holdover. Let's say they're supposed to be out and they stick around a little bit longer. If you have a week to get that house make ready, done, that can be a problem. But the lease, at least here in Texas, provides for 3 times the rent. So if they stick around a day or two longer, you're going to charge them. It's punitive. This is taken from Texas State Property Code. You can go out and find that code. You can read through it. It's pretty meaty. It might take you a while. You may fall asleep a few times, but it will get to this notion of holdover. That applies to Texas. If you're in Tennessee or Ohio or somewhere else, right, do your due diligence. One other clause that I have in my lease and I've seen in other leases that is very important is in the Texas Association of Realtors lease, it's paragraph 28, early termination. We want to know ahead of time, what am I going to do in that case that you need to leave early for some reason? And there's sundry paragraphs and subparagraphs in here. The one that always interests me is subparagraph B, assignment, subletting, and replacement tenants. And it's, we don't want to sublet. We don't want to do assignment, but there will be cases where I have to replace a resident. Very, very commonly, I've seen this happen where someone moves in. Four months later, they had to move back out because their job was moving them. It's very often due to a job move. And this paragraph allows me to say, well, I will grant you early termination, but it's going to cost you blank percent of 1 month's rent that replacement resident is going to pay. So if their rent was $2,000, I'm able to take it up now to $2,200 because the market has shifted. That outgoing resident is going to pay me blank percent of 1 month's rent. What do you put in there? I had 100% for the longest time. I saw somebody's lease that was 150. I was like, well, yeah, why not? Who's paying this? Most of the time it's the employer. I took that up. So that guy that was with me for 4 months and then had to move for a job, huge bonus. It was great. He was there such a short period of time. There was no wear and tear. There was practically no make ready. And I got 150% of the rent. That is negative vacancy if you look at that from an economic point of view. So very, very important to protect yourself there and have ready, what do I do in this situation? Your lease should dictate all of these things. Now that's an exception. What are the costs that are associated with, specifically with a vacancy? We're not thinking about the repairs that you need to do at a move out. But if you have a vacant house, what are the costs? Well, yard care, right? Depending on the time of year, maybe it's getting up the leaves right now, keeping the gutters clear, mowing the grass, trimming the trees, whatever goes along with yard care, utilities, right? In wintertime, I want to be sure heat's on, don't I? I may need to winterize the property, in fact. Put the covers on the spigots outside. We do have mortgages in place. So yes, there is principal and interest. I'm paying that mortgage. There are taxes and insurance that I need to accrue for. Those things can add up. Let's be frank. Those things can add up. So we want to keep that vacancy period as short as we can. Now, I will tell you as well, I'm just going to give you a caution here. Know your insurance policy on that property. Most policies for, you know, most landlord policies, let's call them, they will allow a vacancy for a limited period during a turn. Usually what I've seen is 45 or 60 days. So they're okay if it's vacant for 45 days, let's say. After 45 days, if something happens, there's a break-in, there's vandalism, or it's the wintertime and a pipe breaks, you're going to have a problem. Now, talk with your insurance agent or your insurance broker to understand exactly what is excluded and not excluded in and out of that vacant period, what that means. By the way, during a renovation, typically a lot of policies don't consider it vacant because your rehab crew is there for the bulk of the time. But if you go beyond that period, if you're holding it that long, something's going on. You need to change something if it's vacant that long. But some carriers, insurance carriers, do offer what is called a vacancy endorsement. It's an extra cost, but it mitigates that risk, adds a layer of security. And typically, once that is occupied again, you can cancel that and get a refund of the balance. It's prorated, get a refund of the balance of the premium. But you want to keep that vacancy short. How do we do that? Good marketing, right? Goes back to those pictures that I talked about. Make sure you get those good pictures when they're available, when you can do that, when it's vacant. And if you don't have time because you're working a full-time job, hire that out. Hire a leasing agent. If you don't have time to devote, get somebody else to do that for you. Yes, there's an added cost there, but you want to get that thing done and moved as quickly as you can. And that may mean lowering the price. Maybe you went in a little too aggressively. I've done this before. Market shifted a little bit during my analysis period or during the 3 or 4 years that I was sitting on that with the prior residents. Well, if I was too aggressive with my price, lower that. It is better to lower $25 a month. What is that? $300 a year, $50 a month, $600 a year, and get it rented now. Avoid those vacancy costs. Better to do that than wait a full month just to get to that $2,000 or $2,200, whatever the rent is. You do the math. Right, where's that break-even point? It's usually very, very soon after you lower that, get it rented, you're good to go. And then you have good lease terms, as described earlier, that allow you to show, allow you access to the property, etc. How do we minimize vacancy, though? Keeping people in place. You keep residents longer by being a good operator. Let's talk about that. Being a good operator will result in less vacancy and thereby lower turn costs. How do you do that? Listen, when residents see that you're taking care of their home where they live, they appreciate that. That is goodwill. They will stay longer. And if there are maintenance items, you know, we go in best product, best price. Sometimes something happens, right? So if there are maintenance requests or maintenance issues, there are usually two cases here. First case, it's something you neglected to repair, something with the wrong with the property. Go fix it. Fix it now. Don't wait till the turn. That's just added work to do then. Or that's case one. Case two, it's something the resident did. It's what we call resident neglect, right? Well, get out there, fix it now, and charge it back. The important message here is you want to stay up on top of this during that occupancy. You want to do regular walkthroughs. I call these maintenance checkups. Right? Puts a little bit of a more positive turn to that. You want to get out there and make sure that those residents are taking care of the property. You want to find those things that they, maintenance issues that they forgot to tell you about or just didn't want to bother you with. I have that a lot. Great residents are like, I didn't want to bother you. Well, no, let me know. I'd rather fix it now so that I can keep the property show ready so that as soon as you give me that notice 60 days ahead of lease termination, I can get it on the market and it's ready to go. So regular walkthrough, staying on top of that during the hold period is very, very pivotal to keeping that vacancy and that vacancy period short. And if you rehabbed it right, after one of those, if you do have a shorter occupancy, a shorter residency, there really shouldn't be that much to do. I've had a few cases where people moving in from out of state just stuck around for 12 months. The wear and tear was minimal. Some minor touch-up to the paint, a quick clean, maybe address the carpets if needed. Pretty inexpensive. Goes very, very fast. Doesn't even have, you know, we can do that when they're out. Go ahead and show the property in the interim. But if you rehabbed it right, there will be very little to to do. And by the way, a proper security deposit, which should be part of your lease, will protect you as well. You want that if in houses, we want that at least as high as our rent. I prefer to set a little bit higher to differentiate it. If it's apartments, they tend to be lower, or, you know, if rent is $1,000, $1,500, it may be $400 or $500. If I have a house renting for $2,200, I'm going to ask you for $2,300 security deposit. And you need to understand how that protects you and understand what you can deduct for. Here, again, I would point you in Texas to the Texas State Property Code, because this does outline and stresses or underscores the fact that you cannot use that security deposit for normal wear and tear. Right? If you have a resident in place for 10 years, the carpet's going to need some replacement, some loving, isn't it? You can't charge back for that. But if the windows are broken, things like that, yes, you can. Yes, you can. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Don't take that to heart. But that security deposit protects you here as well, because you can then charge against that deposit some of those repairs that may result from their occupancy. Proper documentation, again, inventory and condition form, those pictures, videos, anything you got prior to handing over the key. So that's how you reduce vacancy time and the associated vacancy costs. That's how you reduce the maintenance that goes into that turn, handle it during the period, charge it back. And really, everything we've talked about today goes back to education. I told you, I've been a member of Lifestyles Unlimited for over a dozen years now. I've learned so much here. I built my team thanks to Lifestyles Unlimited. They helped me find the vendors. They helped me build my team, understand the processes, how to renovate properly, how understanding my lease, following that lease, the notion of regular checkups, etc. So big, big part of making sure you're successful in this part of the process, because this is just one of the processes. You find the house, you buy the house, you renovate the house, you operate the house. At some point, there may be a turn. This is just another process, another step. And we can teach you all of these things at Lifestyles Unlimited. I'll tell you, over a dozen years, it gets easier each time you do it. It becomes rote, right? It's just a thing. It's just part of the process, you know. And sometimes when a resident moves out, it's beneficial. You make a little bit of money, you have negative vacancy. It's a great thing. So, hey, great show today. I appreciate you tuning in. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. You have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.